Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we plunge into dense and, well, fascinating sources to really pull out the essential knowledge you need. Today, we're tackling a big one, yeah. A collection of insights all centered around Hazel E. Barnes' really important work, Humanistic Existentialism, the Literature of Possibility. Now, for many of us, I think the word existentialism probably conjures up, you know, images of black turtlenecks, maybe smoky cafes, and just this general vibe of gloom. It's often seen as this heavy, dark philosophy, right? All about despair and maybe the meaninglessness of life. But what if that common perception is, well, profoundly, maybe wonderfully wrong? What if this whole philosophy, far from being bleak, is actually one of the most optimistic and empowering frameworks for truly seizing your freedom and, you know, creating a meaningful life?
That's exactly the misconception Barnes was trying so hard to correct. And yeah, that's really our mission for this deep dive. We're going to explore how she just radically reframes atheistic existentialism, especially, you know, the French school, Sartre, de Beauvoir, Camus, not as some doctrine of nihilism or despair, but as what she brilliantly calls a tough-minded humanism. It's a philosophy that kind of strips away all our comfortable illusions and places the full weight, the meaning and responsibility squarely on our shoulders, yours and mine.
Okay, so get ready to challenge those assumptions, maybe, because we're about to discover how the absence of some preordained cosmic plan isn't a cosmic tragedy at all. Instead, Barnes argues it's the very thing, the condition, that makes genuine freedom, creativity, and profound moral choice possible for you. Right here, right now, it's actually a story of liberation, really, not limitation. So to really appreciate this reframing, let's start with the person, the remarkable woman, who brought these ideas to, well, a much wider audience. Who exactly was Hazel E. Barnes?
Hazel E. Barnes, yeah. She lived from 1915 to 2008, an American philosopher, also a classicist, and a translator. Really quite the combination. She held a distinguished professorship at the University of Colorado Boulder. Her background alone positioned her uniquely, but what makes her the authority here is something really special.
Sounds impressive, sure, but what gives her such an authoritative voice on something as complex as, say, French existentialism?
Well, the crucial detail, the thing you really need to know, is that Barnes was the first person to translate Jean-Paul Sartre's massive work, Le Triclinion, you know, being and nothingness, into English. This was back in 1956. And this wasn't just about swapping words. It required this almost complete philosophical immersion. She had to practically live inside Sartre's thought, yeah, to understand every little nuance and intention from the inside out. It gave her this just unparalleled grasp of the philosophy's core.
Wow. So she didn't just study it from afar. She truly inhabited it. And this book, Humanistic Existentialism, it wasn't just another academic text for her, was it? Sounds like it felt like a personal mission.
Oh, absolutely. Barnes saw how post-war America was, well, largely misunderstanding existentialism, dismissing it as morbid or cynical, or maybe just some foreign intellectual fad, you know? She saw this profound humanistic potential within it just being completely missed. So this book is her deliberate corrective, yeah. An impassioned attempt to present the philosophy not as some abstract puzzle, but as a vital, practical framework for confronting life's most fundamental questions head on. She really saw it as a guide for living.
Okay, here's where Barnes truly, I think, reshapes our understanding. Her central argument radically reframes existentialism from that gloomy picture we talked about earlier. What's the big liberating idea she really wants us to grasp?
The big idea, fundamentally, is that existentialism at its core is actually an optimistic and empowering philosophy. Now, she doesn't shy away from the darker aspects, not at all, but she confronts that common perception of it being nihilistic or despairing head on. Instead, she argues it's a tough-minded humanism, emphasizing our amazing capacity for creating meaning and value ourselves.
So it's less about giving up in the face of meaninglessness and much more about stepping up with courage. Taking charge.
Precisely. It's about stripping away those comforting illusions we often cling to, like a divine purpose or some predetermined human nature, or even just, you know, society telling us who we should be. By doing that, it places the full weight, meaning, value, responsibility squarely on your shoulders. The absence of a preordained cosmic plan isn't a tragedy, see. It's the very condition that makes genuine freedom, real creativity, and truly moral choices possible.
This immediately brings to mind that really profound question her book asks. In a universe without God or any intrinsic meaning, how can human beings live a meaningful, ethical, and purposeful life? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What's Barnes's powerful answer?
Her answer is so profound, it's almost startling, really. Meaning isn't found, she says, it's created. Barnes argues that by accepting our radical freedom, what Sartre famously called our condemnation to be free, we become the sole source of value in the world. We are it. Every single choice you make is a creative act. It doesn't just define who you are, but it also contributes to a vision of what humanity ought to be. That's the literature of possibility in the subtitle. These aren't just abstract ideas floating around, but stories exploring this daunting, but also exhilarating human condition.
Okay, let's dig into some of those core existentialist concepts that Barnes clarifies and, re-illuminates for us. The first one's foundational. Existence precedes essence. For someone just encountering this, what does that truly mean for them, practically?
Right. It's a complete flip, really, of how we often think about ourselves. We usually imagine we have some inherent essence, you know, a blueprint, a predefined nature, maybe a fixed purpose, like a paper knife is made to cut. But Barnes, channeling Sartre, says no. You are first born, you exist, and only through your choices and your actions do you define who you are. You're not born with a label, you earn it, or rather you create it through every single decision. It's incredibly liberating because your past doesn't have to dictate your future, but also, terrifying. Because there's no instruction manual, right? No true self to discover, only one you have to actively create.
That terrifying part, that brings us to radical freedom and the resulting anguish you mentioned. Barnes really reframes anguish, too. It's not just sadness, is it?
No, far from it. Anguish, in Barnes' interpretation, isn't just everyday sadness or, despair. It's that profound, almost dizzying sense of total responsibility. Not just for your own life, but for the image of humanity you endorse with every single act.
Yeah.
Like when you choose, you're not just choosing for yourself. You're effectively saying, this is what humanity should do.
Yeah.
It's a huge ethical burden that demands conscious thought, an awareness of the stakes. It's that feeling you get when you realize the buck truly, utterly stops with you.
And it sounds like we often try desperately to, escape that burden of freedom. Is that where bad faith comes into the picture?
Absolutely, yeah. Bad faith is essentially the act of self-deception. It's lying to ourselves about our own profound freedom and responsibility. Barnes explains it often takes a couple of forms. One is pretending we're just a fixed object. I can't help it. That's just the way I am, or my past made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
The other is pretending we're pure consciousness, like totally disconnected from our situation or past choices. Think of Sartre's famous example of the waiter who's too much a waiter.
Yeah.
Right. So perfectly playing the role that he tries to become an automaton.
Right.
Basically to escape his freedom to be otherwise, to be more than just the waiter.
Hmm. So the constant struggle for authenticity is really about honestly acknowledging and, embracing our freedom, even when it's deeply uncomfortable. It's living with your eyes wide open, I guess. Okay, so beyond our internal struggles, how do we navigate this world filled with other people? Sartre's famous quote, "Hell is other people," gets thrown around a lot. How does Barnes clarify this for us, maybe make it less misanthropic sounding?
She offers a really vital clarification there. It doesn't mean all human relationships are doomed or that everyone else is literally hell. No. Rather, it describes a specific kind of suffocating dynamic where we allow the gaze of the other, their perception of us, to objectify us, to strip us of our freedom and define us solely by their judgment.
Yeah.
Imagine you're trying to figure out who you are, but every time you look in someone else's eyes, you only see the role they've assigned you or the label they've stuck on you. That's a kind of hell where your self feels stolen. But, and this is the crucial twist, the other is also absolutely essential. It's often through others that we first gain self-consciousness, by seeing ourselves reflected back. The real challenge, Barnes argues, is to build relationships based on a mutual recognition of freedom, moving from conflict and objectification towards what Sartre called a we subject, where we actually affirm each other's liberty.
That's a really powerful distinction. Hmm. Now, what about Albert Camus? He's often linked with existentialism, though his philosophy is kind of distinct. Barnes includes him in her humanistic framework, right?
She does, yeah. Camus introduces this concept of the absurd. And this is the profound confrontation, the clash between our very human desire for meaning, purpose, clarity, and the unreasonable silence of the world.
Hmm.
The universe, he says, simply offers no intrinsic answers to our deepest questions. It's not hostile, it's just indifferent, silent.
So when faced with that silent, indifferent universe, what are we supposed to do? Just give up, fall into despair?
Not at all. Camus and Barnes is right there with him. Champions a much more defiant response, revolt. This means living in full awareness of the absurd without resignation, just embracing that fundamental tension. It's not about finding some hidden meaning in the universe, but about living meaningfully despite its silence.
Ah, that's where the image of Sisyphus comes in, isn't it? The guy with the rock.
Precisely. Sisyphus, condemned by the gods to push a boulder up a hill forever, only for it to roll back down each time. Camus concludes, famously, "One must imagine Sisyphus happy. Why? Because in that moment, he walks back down the hill, fully conscious of his fate but not deceived by it. He is master of his own life. His struggle itself, his defiance against meaninglessness, that becomes his meaning. This rebellion against an indifferent world is a core tenet of Barnes's humanistic existentialism. It transforms a curse into, well, a triumph of the human will.
Okay, so how does all this radical freedom, the creation of meaning, translate into morality? If there are no objective preordained values out there, how do we decide what's right and wrong? It sounds like it could just lead to anything goes.
Yeah, and this is really the constructive heart of Barnes's argument, and she tackles that concern directly. The answer, for her, is found in commitment and choice. Every action you take is a choice, right? And every choice creates a value. When you choose to act honestly, you're not just being honest in that one isolated instance. You are, in that moment, affirming honesty as a universal value, as something humanity ought to strive for. This is why your radical freedom is just inextricably tied to this profound responsibility, not just for yourself, but really for all of humanity.
Can you give us an example of maybe an existential hero who acts as this kind of legislator for humanity through their choices?
Sure. Barnes often uses Sartre's play The Flies. The hero, Orestes, returns to his city, which is just consumed by guilt and fear under the thumb of these tyrannical gods. He rejects their guilt-ridden morality completely. He accepts his radical freedom by, well, killing the tyrants, and he takes full responsibility. No excuses, no appealing to divine command. And in doing so, he creates a new value for his people, the value of human freedom, of self-determination. He literally liberates them by demonstrating through his actions that they too are free to define their own morality. This powerful story argues that the existentialist hero isn't a nihilist at all. They're a courageous creator of human-centered morality.
Okay, this sounds incredibly abstract sometimes, I admit, but Barnes argues these insights are profoundly practical. So what does this all mean for you, the listener, you know, in your everyday life?
Oh, they really are so practical. Firstly, it means taking absolute ownership of your life. Full stop. It pushes you to stop blaming your past or your circumstances, or that phrase we all use, that's just the way I am. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me, you're prompted to ask, okay, given my situation, what will I choose to do now? It's just an incredibly empowering shift in perspective, really.
And that connects beautifully to making authentic career and life path choices, doesn't it? Not just drifting along.
Absolutely. It encourages you to seriously question if you're pursuing a path just to fulfill societal expectations, which, you know, would be a subtle form of bad faith, or because it truly aligns with values you have freely and consciously chosen and committed to. It's about actively designing your life, not just defaulting to one.
And in a world like ours, with so many competing value systems, how does this help us navigate tricky moral and ethical dilemmas?
Well, Barnes shows us there's no universal rule book just waiting out there to be discovered. When you're faced with a really difficult choice, you understand that your decision isn't just for you. It's an endorsement of a certain way of being for everyone. This imbues even seemingly small moral choices with immense weight and encourages a much deeper reflection than simply, you know, following a prescribed code.
So for anyone out there maybe struggling with a sense of purposelessness, this offers a concrete way to find meaning in what might seem like a meaningless world.
Yes, exactly. And this might be its greatest gift. Instead of passively searching for some external prepackaged purpose, it encourages you, challenges you to create one. Meaning can be found in a personal project, maybe a passionate commitment to a cause, the mastery of a craft, or even just in the very act of living with rebellion and passion, like our friend Sisyphus. It's not out there, it's in here, in your actions.
And finally, it sounds like it offers a powerful path to cultivating resilience as well.
Oh, definitely. The philosophy of the absurd, especially as Barnes explains it, is almost like a recipe for profound resilience. By accepting that the world is indifferent, that suffering is often unavoidable, and that there's no cosmic safety net or guaranteed justice, you cease to be completely shattered by these realities when they hit. The focus shifts to living with dignity and revolt within an unfair world, cultivating that Sisyphus-like strength that comes from embracing struggle as part of life, rather than being broken by it.
You know what really stands out to me listening to all this is how Barnes truly transforms existentialism from something that seems intimidating and, let's be honest, kind of a downer sometimes, into this vibrant, incredibly practical philosophy. It's not about what you can't do because the universe is indifferent, but actually about what you can create and become precisely because you are free.
Indeed. I think the most valuable lesson here is that this worldview is just a radical call to action, a challenge. It finds the very source of human dignity not in some divine creator or a fixed inherent nature, but in our defiant capacity to create ourselves and our world through free and responsible choice. The paradigm shift is really profound, meaning moves from the external to the internal. It says definitively, you have to look to yourself.
So if Barnes is right, and the most profound and liberating possibility of all is that we are the sole creators of meaning.
And if every choice you make is not just for you, but actually contributes to defining what humanity ought to be, then the question becomes, what will you choose to create today?
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We really hope this exploration has given you a fresh, maybe even empowering perspective on what it means to be truly free and truly responsible.